Welcome to the Sunday night There is a Solution newcomer and returning members meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Visit our website at oaontario.org where you will find this audio recording, additional podcasts, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. The opinions expressed are those of individual OA members and do not represent OA as a whole. We will now introduce our speaker, a member who has at least 6 months of abstinence, has recovered through the directions in the Big Book, and maintains recovery on a daily basis. After the share, there will be time to make a comment or ask a question about the OA program or what the speaker has shared. Please help me welcome Kelly G., a compulsive overeater from Florida.
Hi, everybody. Thank you so much for asking me to do service. This is such a treat. My name is Kelly G. I am a recovered compulsive overeater in Florida. I have been in the rooms about 12 years, and I was introduced to the 12 steps through a treatment center. When I was in college, I took a medical leave from school. I did the geographical move, right? So I grew up in New York and I went to school in Rhode Island, and I could not stop eating compulsively, and I did not know what was wrong with me. I didn't know that I had an addiction, a disease. And so I tried the diets and I've tried the exercise, and I just could not get it. And when I went to transfer at the University of Miami, I said to myself, well, I'm going to have to be in a bathing suit all the time. I'm going to be in the warm climate. I'm going to want to eat healthy and look good. And so I went to the University of Miami, and that made things worse. I remember being in a lecture hall and a professor called me out saying, excuse me, ma'am, no eating in here. And I just remember I had to leave because I had to eat. I had to eat, and I left to eat more. So I took a medical leave from school, and I went to a treatment center that specialized in treating food addiction as an addiction. And I was there for 2 months, and that's where I learned the meetings, food plan, what I'm allergic to. I had no idea that sugar and flour triggered that physical allergy. I had no idea. So I went into treatment and I resumed college, and I got abstinent and I had my sponsor, and then I started sponsoring and my life took off. I had 8.5 years of abstinence. My life was so full. December 8th of 2020, I relapsed, and it didn't start December 8th of 2020. That's not when the relapse starts. The relapse starts about 6 months prior, when the food starts December 8th, but the relapse started earlier. And I was in a relationship with a man that I thought I was going to marry, and we were living together and things were not good. And I've always come to the rooms. I've always had a sponsor. I wasn't always sponsoring. I wasn't doing 10 steps. I wasn't looking at my defects. I followed a food plan. I lost the weight and I looked great. And I went to meetings and I was very disciplined, and that was the extent of it. I didn't pray. I didn't meditate. But people wanted to be like me because I looked good, because it seemed like I had it all together. But the truth is I had no spirituality. I was not working the program. I was following the food plan and going to meetings and speaking with others, but that was it. And this is such a, the only solution is spiritual. These are all just tools. We're all gathered here as a tool for a meeting, and that's great. And we can do this every single night, and this isn't going to save any of us. It's a tool. Food plan, a tool. Outreach, a tool. And yes, using all these tools helps us to get through the day, but ultimately it's a higher power. So I want to say, most importantly, is that relapse does not have to be part of your story. You hear all the time, or at least I do, you know, relapse is part of everyone's story. You know, relapse is part of our, says who? Says who? It doesn't have to be. Relapse isn't inevitable, you know? And for a while I thought, like, especially when I was getting abstinent, it was almost like, it's just a matter of time until I pick up again. But it's like, but what if it's not? Like, what if I never have to do that again? Like, there is nothing in life that's going to happen where food is going to be the answer. Like, there is no diagnosis that it's going to be like, go binge your brains out. There you go. Like, it's never going to be that. And so what I had to learn was that I need to learn how to be uncomfortable and that I'm not going to die. And that's what these steps showed me, and having a sponsor and doing the work, that I'm not going to die if I'm uncomfortable. And in fact, I'm going to make myself more uncomfortable with the food than I was with the discomfort without the food. And the disease, right? The disease, which is in my own mind, in my own voice. That's what's so scary about this disease, is that it's in my own voice. So in a weak moment, it's really hard to differentiate between the disease voice and my voice. And my voice is connected to my higher power's voice. So December 8th of 2020, I relapsed. My relationship of 4 years ended, New Year's. I moved out of a condo on the beach to an apartment, a single apartment with myself. He took our puppy, moved to Oregon. And I couldn't put the food down. I couldn't put the food down. For what? I lost everything. And now I'm binging. And then the food I'm going to give up, which is like, I haven't eaten any of this stuff in 8.5 years. Now everything's taken from me. And all of a sudden I'm motivated to self-love and treating myself well after I just opened the floodgates and I'm an addict. Like, you have to be kidding. And I realize I'm losing everything. And the more I hated myself and the more I ate, the more I wanted to eat and hate myself. And the more I gained weight, the more weight I wanted to gain, because I couldn't stop. And it was almost like this domino effect of like, I hate myself, so I'm going to eat, and I'm going to eat because I hate myself. And it's just like this no-win cycle. And it brought me up to 60 pounds in 11 months. And my everything was swollen. I know there's men in the room. My breasts were so heavy. It was unbearable. I had a white couch, and there's tomato sauce stains on it, chocolate stains on it. My sheets, I'd wake up in dripping sweat. I would be on these food meetings with my camera off, ordering Chinese food and getting the door when it arrives. I would have pints of ice cream waiting for me in the freezer after the Chinese food's done. I would then make, I mean, unheard of amounts of food. I didn't want to lay down. I couldn't sit up. I was nauseous. I'm not bulimic in regards to throwing up, but I was happy if something came up because then there was more room for something else to go down. I could not live, and I hated everything. I didn't want to see anyone in the elevator. I live in an apartment building. I would wear the baggiest clothes. I'd go to Old Navy and buy these maxi dresses and just rotate the colors of the maxi dresses. I was in such a dark place. I was so mad at God for waking me up in the morning. I would get a sponsor and I would say, this is it. This is going to be it. And I couldn't keep a sponsor. It's not that they dropped me. I dropped them before they could even drop me, because I couldn't get more than 2 or 3 days under my belt. And then I'd pick up and they'd say, call me in 3 days. And then in a week, they're like, well, I haven't called me because I haven't been abstinent for 3 days. You haven't heard from me. It wasn't that I wasn't willing. I couldn't do it. I could not stop. And there were times when I would just be crying and eating. Like, I had no control of my hand. It was just like there. And it's like attached to me. It's like the most bizarre thing. And I would be crying and in pain and my stomach's killing me. And I couldn't stop. And then one morning I went to an AA meeting. I'm not an AA. I'm only an OA. Probably need plenty of other fellowships. Al-Anon, Coda. I mean, you know, I need the whole thing, but I'm only an AA. I'm only an OA right now. But I remember one morning I went to a face-to-face OA meeting. I mean, AA meeting. And all I could think about was Dunkin' Donuts hot chocolate and an everything bagel with butter. That's all I could think about the whole meeting. And it's like, I'm in a trance. I am in a trance where I do not hear, I do not see, like I am possessed. And I'm like going like this during the meeting, like, please, like, stop. Like, I couldn't, the obsession. Then after the meeting, I remember making a phone call to a fellow being like, this is on my mind. The obsession's there. What do you know? I get in the car and I get what I was obsessing about. And then I remember just calling my parents that morning, and they live in Naples, Florida. So it's about an hour and 45 minutes from me. And I remember calling my parents and saying, I'm coming to your house right now, and I don't know when I'm leaving. I need help. I'm going to go back to treatment. I can't stop eating. I don't know what I'm going to do. And I threw in a couple pairs of leggings. I don't know what else I brought. And I got in my car and drove to Naples, and I just bawled my eyes out. And when I got there, I laid in my bed. It's like 3 in the afternoon in the dark with the shades down. I was defeated. And I made a call to my treatment center to see if I could get in there as soon as possible and take a medical leave from work. And I couldn't function. I couldn't, it's life or death for me. I want to die. So I can go into treatment or can be, I just didn't want to be alone. And I couldn't stop. So someone had shared with me a podcast from a fellow, and I had loved the podcast. And I called this woman weeks ago to say, like, hey, heard your podcast, loved it. So I'm laying in my bed in Naples, and then my phone rings. And of course, right, when we're like hung, I mean, when I'm like, who's calling? What do they want? You know, and then it's like a number I don't know. And it's like even worse. It's like, oh God, like, please, why are they calling? But I pick up, and it's this woman who I called a couple weeks ago about her podcast. And I said to myself, oh my gosh. And I told her, I was like, I have such a migraine and I'm so glad you called. I just don't feel good at all. And I kind of explained to her what was going on. And she was just like, well, why don't you call me tomorrow at 10 in the morning, call me tomorrow. And she was full. She wasn't available to sponsor. I didn't even ask her to sponsor, but she was like, well, I'm full, but you know, and I was like, all right, fine, good, great. And she was like, well, call me at 10 in the morning. So I call her at 10. And she was like, are you willing to give this one last try? Like, are you willing to give this 110%? And I will give you 110%. And if it doesn't work this time, then you can go into treatment. And I said, look, that is so sweet of you. And of course, I'd love to give this another try. But like, I can't promise you that I'm going to be abstinent for more than a day or two. Like, this is not my first rodeo here. Like, I go through sponsors every week. And she's like, if you give me 100%, I will give you 100%. We are going to talk every single day, and we are going to get through these steps in 1 month, and your life is going to change. And I said, heck, like, that's sweet. Oh, that's sweet. It's like a little lullaby, right? So she's like, she believed it before I could. And I literally did every single thing that she told me. And I got recovered in 30 days. And I have been abstinent for almost a year and a half. Back again, the weight's off, I'm sponsoring. I just recently went to LA for the comp for the birthday party. Now, look, the 30 days, right? Yes, there's blood, sweat, and tears, but the blood, sweat, and tears were so much worse than disease. And I want to talk about what I went through right after I got abstinent. And then I'll talk about what happened getting abstinent that month of getting recovered, rather. But a month after I got abstinent, I mean, recovered, I had an Achilles heel injury where my heel was sliced open and I was in a wheelchair for a month. I couldn't shower. I couldn't work out. I couldn't do all these staples that like keep me sane. And there was not 1 second of any day for that month where I could not get out of this wheelchair. I couldn't put any weight on my foot. My mom had to take me to the bathroom. She had to pull down my pants. I couldn't, like, the whole bit. There was not 1 second where I wanted to eat. There's not 1 second where I was like, you know what? A milkshake would really take the edge off. I upped my meetings. I upped my phone calls. I upped my service. And I counted my absolute blessings that I was abstinent and recovered during this time. And I actually lost weight sitting in a wheelchair and not moving. I lost weight. That's how much I'm consuming and being abstinent. It's not about going to the gym. It's not about what I look like. It's about following directions, following my food plan, and the rest will take care of itself. The dependency is not on me. The dependency is on my higher power. Before, the dependency was on me. I had to do it. I just have to follow directions and the rest is taken care of. Now, in getting abstinent, I don't know where everyone is at in this room, right? Some people may have time under the belt. Some people have day one. Some people have 30 days. Who knows? But what I can say is this, is that day one is never the hardest for me. Day one's probably the easiest because I'm sick to my stomach, I'm nauseous, and the thought of food makes me not feel good, right? It's day four, day five, day six, or day seven that is the sneaky quicksand underneath my feet. Those are the days where the hangover is over. I'm starting to become conscious of how miserable and uncomfortable I really am. And now I want the food. And then I pick up and then the cycle continues. So this time around in these 30 days, it was day seven. And my mom, who's not one of us, she has a stash of chocolates in her purse. Okay. My parents' marriage has issues to the point where she has to hide snacks in her closet. She can't eat them in front of my dad or I don't know. She sneaks food. Okay. Whatever. Long story short is I know where the stash is. Let me put it to you that way. And day seven, when I was ravenous, I knew right where those chocolates were. And I remember going to her closet and saying, you know what? Screw this. I don't want to deal with this. I went to her closet and I smelt the chocolate because that's what I do. I tease myself. I smell it. And I'm like, okay, don't do it, Kelly. And I put it back. And then I go in, I'm thinking to myself, what can I lie about to leave this house? I'm going to say I need toothpaste. And I'm plotting like this whole script. Like I need toothpaste, right? Because there's no one else's toothpaste in the house, right? It's just, I need this toothpaste now. And then all of a sudden, I make an outreach call. I'm like, okay, Kelly, like just do things different, make a call. But outreach calls never help me because I would either be calling you from the store, calling you on my way home from the store, calling you with food in my mouth, or just calling you to check off the box that I called. I tried, they didn't pick up. Oops, too bad. So I called a girlfriend of mine in program and she was like, Kelly, what time is it there? She's Pacific. And I said, it's 3:00. She goes, what time are you going to bed? I said, 9:30. She's like, okay. So for 6.5 hours, are you willing to tolerate the most discomfort ever? Like, are you for 6.5 hours, if I told you it was going to end when you woke up in the morning, would you sit this one through? And I said, yeah, like, yeah, people give birth, right? Like you can get, you know, it's going to end. But the fear that I have when I don't know it's going to end, even though it always ends if I don't pick up, but the fear of not knowing when, I always ate over it because I didn't know. It could end in a minute. It could end in a day. I don't know, but I couldn't wait that long. So she told me and I said, if it doesn't pass by tomorrow, I am eating. She, okay. Okay. So this friend of mine, when she got phone with me, she texted another woman saying, hey, can you reach out to my friend? She's struggling. And I'm like, oh God. So I get a phone call. I'm like, oh, I don't know this number. What does she want? But I'm like, all right, God's will. Like I'm doing the counterintuitive. This sweetheart woman calls me who's friends with this other one. She's like, hi, I got your number from someone. Hi, yeah, struggling. Long story short, we talk. And she tells me that she is 5 years abstinent. Her ex-husband tried to choke her. She was in a coma in the hospital. She made amends for something that she did in the ninth step. She made amends to the government and they arrested her on the spot and she was in jail for 2 years. Her daughter's boyfriend committed suicide. She barely has any money, works a night job, a day job. And she's abstinent and grateful and happy. And I'm laying like a snow angel in my king-size bed in my family's home while my mom's making salmon for dinner. And I'm like, I want to eat. And it made me realize, like, why is she happy and I'm not? Why does she not want to eat and I want to eat? And for the first time talking with her, I got out of my own head. I got out of my own head and I was like, you know what? You are selfish, Kelly. All you think about is you. How do you feel in this moment? Oh, like you want a little snack, you know? And I know this sounds like harsh, right? Because it's more than like, oh, you want a little snack. It's like, no, I'm an addict and I'm fiending for this. Like I'll cut off a limb for the snack. Right? It's more than just a little cute. But like listening to her, she promised me that I would get through it. She got through it. And I said, you went to jail for making an amends? Like, What kind of, you know what I mean? Like, I know that's like it says in the big book to go down any lanes and like that's what it means, but like, no one actually, like, I didn't think it was actually like really like gonna happen. Like, you get arrested and she did. And I wanna say that one of the women that she met in jail, she was on the streets with when she was younger and she was an alcoholic and she worked the steps with her in jail. And now they're both friends and recovered and everything. And she passed it on to her and she said that was one of the most magical periods of her life. Like stuff like that happens if you stay the course. Like that actually happens. And it's like we can't see the picture when we're in the picture. We can't see when the dark is going to turn to light. And we just literally have to like follow each other and like pray that like eventually it's going to happen for us. Because if you told me that I would be where I am right now, I said, when I was working through the steps, I had to go back home to my apartment with a stained couch that I said I'd never step foot in again. And I had to get more clothes. And I remember driving back to get more clothes. And I got back to my parents' house. My mom goes, "How did you feel stepping into your apartment?" And I started hysterically crying, saying, "I'm never stepping foot in there again. I'm breaking my lease and I'm moving out." That was like my deathbed. Like, I did not want to be in this apartment again.
In a minute.
Thank you so much. When I finished the steps, I went home and I said, "I love it here." I realized that there are slip covers on my couch and they can be washed and it can turn white again. And I realized that I live in a beautiful building with a beautiful gym. And like, I'm so lucky. And then guess what? I bought a new couch and I bought a new bed. And I got new furniture and I got some artwork. And now I love my apartment. I could have sworn I would never step foot in here again. It's my second year renewing. It's a different lens. When I'm clear, when I can think straight, when I don't hate myself, when I can function, everything looks different. And, you know, it's not perfect. Okay. My prayer and meditation, right? Like, yeah, it would be lovely for it to be super consistent and, you know, every morning, 30 minutes, and I journal and I write to God and God sings to me and speaks to me. And it's just like my breakfast makes itself. And no, it's definitely not like that. It's like some mornings it's like, oh God, you know, but it's also like, thank you, God. Oh, God, just keep me out of my own way and my own head. And I have fellows that will text me a meditation that I forgot I should have done and I do it. And it's just like we hold each other accountable. But like my sponsor taught me about the CDAs, consistent daily actions. And those are the things that I resort back to on days where I feel shaky, days where I feel off, days where I'm angry and in my defects. And those are the what I did to get abstinent is what I need to do to stay abstinent. And just because I have time under my belt does not mean I'm immune to anything. So I don't do this perfectly, but to get abstinent, I made 3 phone calls a day. I sent my food, and my sponsor had me write a couple bullet points on what I talked about in those 3 conversations. Because how many times have we had conversations with people and then we get off the phone and it's like, all right, I don't even know what we just said. I don't even know her name. I'm not even saving her number. Like, there's so many times where I wasn't listening. And my sponsor had me like have to like write, like we talked about step one and she told me about how she relapsed. And then, you know, she told me about her son is going through and I just like had to listen. And so I'd send her that every night in addition to my food. And then that also got me in the strengthening the muscle of sending my 11th step each night. Because then when I got through the steps, it was that behavior of sending off my 11th step, like getting rid of it. Like, this is how I'm closing my day. So we addicts, I need discipline. I like structure. I like routine. I like repetition. You know, I have the same breakfast every day. I'm never sick of it. It's like never sick of it. Like 50 first dates, like same thing every day. Like, oh, what's for breakfast? The same thing. No shock. Still excited, still like it. And it's like, that's how I operate. That's what works for me. And we all have our own equation. Some people need variety, right? I don't. But it's like, I know, thank God for myself, what it takes for me to be abstinent. And if I do those things, then I'm going to make it till tomorrow. And they're non-negotiable either. Like, I'm not risking this. I'm not going to like try like something new. Like, no, like I'm not like, this is the most important thing in my life, you know? And I'm dating and I guess I have a boyfriend, if you want to call it that, I guess, like, I think it's been so long. It's like, I don't know what you are, but sure. And I remember he was like making steak and I weigh out my food and I like weighed out my food. And then he like fed me a piece of steak. And I'm like, I don't just do this. Like, where does the steak fall in? Like, how many ounces is that little bite? And, you know, and I did the best I could. And I subtracted some of the fish for that bite. Like, but I'm just saying, like, I don't just like have a bite, like an extra little bite of like, no, like, yeah, that's cute that you can feed me with a fork, but like, this is not cute. Like, this isn't what I do. So I beat to my own drum because this is life or death. And I am nothing without this program. I am nothing. I am obese and I am miserable and I am alone and I want to not wake up in the morning. And the consistent daily actions, you know, it's like, what are we doing on a daily basis that gets us out of our head? When I'm going through stuff, I try not to call and say, yeah, hi, can, like, I need your advice. Like, no, how are you? What's going on with you? You know, how can I show up? But I also do want to hear the nitty gritty, right? Like, I find that I connect most with people who can share about themselves and say, hey, this happened in my life. Like, let each other in too, you know, like, let's get real and just like open up, because that's the stuff. It's like, oh, you have urges? Well, let's talk. Like, what's going on in your life? So, thanks so much. So it's just, this program has saved me and given me another chance. I'm on borrowed time here, you know? Like, I'm on borrowed time with this life. Like, everything is such a gift to be able to wake up and get dressed and wear what I want to wear. That my jeans button. Like, they button today and they're going to also button tomorrow. Like, that's a miracle. You know, that I want to put in the effort that if I'm not leaving my apartment the entire day, I still put on makeup for me, you know, I'm worth the effort. I buy a nice candle. I do nice things for myself because I want to, I'm worth it. I've spent so long hating myself, you know, and there's times that I do get frustrated with myself and my defects come up and my anger and my insecurity. Of course. And that's why step 6 and 7, they're ongoing. Of course I'm going to do that. And that's why we have these steps. So if we do enough 10 steps, we don't have to do another 4 step, right? Who would love to never do another 4 step? But it's like, that's when things don't pile up and we nip them in the butt as they happen real time. Then like, you have a pretty clear like channel to God. And that's like how good things happen in my life. So I'll leave it at that. I'm really, really grateful to be here. Like, thank God that I can be a channel for all of you. Cause I really couldn't have been, like 2 years ago. And, I'm no better or different than anybody else. Like, someone who has day one versus me, I just have more day ones like racked up together that I'm abstinent. So this is possible and relapse is not inevitable. So just remember that discomfort is temporary and recovery is permanent. So thanks for letting me share.